Hey guys, how's it going, man? Hey, I'm Scott. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Appreciate you tuning in. Hey, guess what? Sheldon wrote something about foreign policy, so I'm going to have him on. The great Sheldon Richmond from the Future Freedom Foundation. So that'll be cool. Also, Yosef Butt. And his thing is, he is a real nuclear scientist, not like David Albright. He is an actual scientist and knows what he's talking about. And you know, he does a bit of punditry on the Iranian nuclear issue. Thank goodness he does. Dispelling some myths. And so, yeah, man, that should be really good. And I got some news for you, too. I'll start with the good news right now. Did you hear that the USA Freedom Act failed to get out of committee? And that's at least in part because Rand Paul voted against it. And Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell both voted against it for the opposite reasons. Mitch McConnell wants no law to bind the power of the totalitarian police state to spy on you all day. Whereas Rand Paul objected that the USA Freedom Act would reauthorize the very worst parts of the Patriot Act and, in fact, didn't go far enough in rolling back the NSA. And he argued he'd rather have real reform than a fake one that's not good enough. And I don't know if it's really the best policy, like politics-wise, to get the reform, to say no to this one and keep pushing for a better one. But, yeah, sounds like it probably is the right strategy if you want something, you know, real done about this crisis. Then, yeah, don't go for the fake reform. And Rand Paul, to his great credit, has refused to go along with the fake reform and said that's why. And so you had some civil liberties Democrats. And you had Rand Paul, and they stopped the USA Freedom Act. Thank goodness. The fact that it's called the USA Freedom Act, and that as part of it, it was going to reauthorize some of the sunsetting parts of the Patriot Act, like Section 215, where they're digging through your records, just goes to show how they are. In fact, when it was originally created, the USA Patriot Act was always named that cynically to exploit your fear and to try to shame your congressman to make your congressman fear that if he opposed it, he'd be creamed in the midterm elections coming up, which worked back in 2001. But with this one, the USA Freedom Act, it actually did start out as an honest attempt to roll back the illegal, unconstitutional mass spying in the Snowden revelations. They destroyed it. They had enough writers and changed enough things about it as to make it horrible, as is their want, you know. So anyway, there's that. Good news. And good for Rand Paul. Hey, somebody encourage Rand Paul to keep doing good things. We like you better when you're good on stuff. There's a lot of articles been written lately about Rand Paul. Boy, oh boy, is he walking this tight wire, balancing act, trying to keep his father's supporters and the libertarians and libertarian-leaning conservatives and peaceniks and Tea Party-ish, not so much the cultural conservatives, I guess the cultural conservatives, but also the fiscal conservatives. How's he going to please all this coalition without losing his base? How's he going to please the rest of them without losing his base? That's the real question. The rest of them, they're all willing to compromise with each other. But with libertarians, no. And so his strategy has been to compromise on the worst things, like wars. And the proof is right there in the pudding, man. And you know what? It's true that Ron Paul didn't win the presidency or anything. But what was his greatest success? Everybody knows. Ron Paul's greatest success was when he told Rudy Giuliani, no, I'm sorry. The truth is, America has been over there at war for a long time, bombing Iraq from bases in Saudi Arabia. That's why we got attacked. And then used that as a, excuse to go on and wage even more wars. That's the real truth of it. And as Ron Paul said, if we ignore the truth of that, we do so at our own peril. So, come on, guys. Giuliani, you take that back. No, I won't, because it's true. And regular people, people never heard of Ron Paul in their lives, never heard of libertarianism in their lives, said, that's true. I remember the 1990s existing, and I remember Bill Clinton bombing Iraq all the time from bases in Saudi Arabia. Bombing that never stopped from January 1991 on. I remember that being a real thing, people said to themselves. And that was what increased Ron Paul's support from Americans and from people around the world, but especially from Americans, by 10,000%. And if anyone doubts that, if anyone on Rand Paul's staff doubts that, well, just watch the documentary For Liberty, How the Ron Paul Revolution Watered the Withered Tree of Liberty, which has the word liberty in it twice in one title, but still, it's a great documentary, man. It really is great. And the lesson of the documentary is that men named Paul, if they dare to tell the truth from their Washington, D.C. bully pulpit, can lead America to be better, can lead Americans to be better, can change their minds about the things they have gone along with the Republican Party on to our nation's very worst detriment, like deficit spending to wage world empire. Come on out and say it, Rand Paul. Robert Kagan is wrong. Being the guarantor of all global security, first of all, is completely crazy and ridiculous and too expensive. And second of all, doesn't work. Ask the Iraqis and the Afghans and the Libyans and the Syrians and the Somalis and the Malians. They'll tell you. Ask the Vietnamese, the ones who aren't all dead. Ask them about America being the guarantor of peace and security. It's a lie. And if it was just an honest mistake, it would still be a completely horrible and stupid one. And the fact that Robert Kagan and William Kristol and all the leading lights of the neoconservative movement have failed over and over again ought to be plenty for Rand Paul to work with. Well, the neoconservatives say we've got to guarantee stability. Well, let's look at Robert Kagan's wife's project in Ukraine. They want to spread stability. Let's look at Robert Kagan's project in Iraq. They want to spread stability. Let's look at Fred Kagan's project in Afghanistan. You can see where I'm going with this. Kagans are horrible on stuff. The Kagans now are saying we need 25,000 ground troops in to go reinvade Iraq and stay forever. Just come on out and fight them, Rand Paul. Just fight them. Kick their ass. There's no reason to have to go halfway. Well, you know, we should bomb the Islamic State, but not in the way Bill Kristol says. Well, why not? Bill Kristol was first out of the gate with Fred Kagan saying we gotta put in the ground troops right now. Well, why not ground troops? If they gotta be destroyed, why not ground troops, Rand Paul? See what happens when you concede a fake, false, ridiculous, immoral premise to the likes of Bill Kristol and Fred Kagan? You're in Obama's position now. Oh, we're going to destroy him, but from the air. Really? How's that working out for you so far? Anyway, I get so frustrated at Rand Paul because it would be so easy to out-argue Hillary Clinton and McCain and Bolton and Paul Ryan and Mark Rubio and Ted Cruz and any of the rest of these right-wing kooks. Yeah, Hillary Clinton included. It would be so easy for him to just whoop them. They're wrong about everything. Why concede their premise that America's got to guarantee the future of Mesopotamia? Even after all this, especially after all this. What was the only interest group in D.C. pushing war with Syria last summer? AIPAC and the Israel lobby. What's the only interest group in D.C. pushing to sabotage the nuclear deal with Iran right now? AIPAC and the Israel lobby. Why doesn't the president force an end to the occupation of Palestine, a leading cause of terrorist attacks against the United States, AIPAC, and the Israel lobby? The Council for the National Interest is pushing back, putting America first and educating the people about what's really at stake in the Middle East. Help support their important work at councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, y'all. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. Yeah, great job on the NSA thing, though, Rand. Yeah. Anyway. Hey, here's something I thought was funny. There's this ridiculous thing in the Forward today about Pink Floyd. And I don't really get it. The Secret Jewish History of Pink Floyd in the Jewish Daily Forward. Okay, this isn't some anti-Semitic thing. It's the Jewish Daily Forward. And their point is that at various times, a couple of Jewish guys helped play keyboards and manage the band. And so that is actually the backbone of an entire 2,000-3,000 word article about the history of Pink Floyd at the Forward. But anyway, who cares about that? There's only two little points I wanted to make, and they're both little points about it. I don't care, but they're not a big deal. First of all, they point to all the fascist imagery from the wall and from Roger Waters' continued touring and doing the wall show as, oh, look at what an anti-Semite this guy is. But then the author even quotes that, oh, yeah, no, he's accusing the Israelis of being fascists, which you don't have to agree with that, but he's not saying that he's a fascist and he hates Jews. No one thinks that that's what he's saying. They admit in the article that, well, here's his quotes about fascism. He's accusing the Israelis of acting like the Nazi Germans. You ain't gotta like that. But why pretend that what he's saying is that he endorses fascism when he is saying that he is an anti-fascist and that's what he's accusing the Israelis of doing? It's a completely hollow argument. It's debunked in the article. Oh, he uses all this fascist imagery. Yeah, to accuse you. So what's your point? It doesn't make any sense. And then you could read the whole damn article and it doesn't say what he's got against Israel at all. It doesn't even imply what anyone in Pink Floyd, past, present, or future, whether they hate each other or not, old Pink Floyd, new Pink Floyd, the other Pink Floyd, the different Pink Floyd, the different incarnations of Pink Floyd, apparently they all just hate Israel. Any indication why at all in the article, at all, anywhere. The closest thing is Roger Waters' quote that the parallels between Nazi Germany and Israel are undeniable, he says. But they still don't allude to what those might be. Perhaps he's saying that the West Bank or the Gaza Strip is like the Warsaw Ghetto, huh? Maybe? Maybe. Only if you can think of that yourself. It's not in the article anywhere. But here's the answer. It's not that Pink Floyd, who, after all, are a bunch of basically like hippies from the 60s and 70s, liberal leftists, they're not right-wing fascist anti-Semites. They're, by definition, civil rightsy types. It couldn't possibly be their anti-Semitism, as they say here. They brought in this guy, Bob Ezrin, who was Jewish, to help run the band for a while. Okay, so it's not that. It's the occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip in East Jerusalem. That's what it is. It's the occupation. And now, not every article about Pink Floyd has got to be about the occupation, but that's what this article is about. It's about Pink Floyd's relationship with Israel. But at no time in here do they even imply what the problem might be. And if you're raised on American television, if you're raised on American newspaper news, and they have, in other words, never in media have explained to you the situation over there with the occupation at all, then you might think that, Jesus, Pink Floyd just hates Jewish people a lot. I wonder what their problem is and why they hate Jews so much. And the thing is, the only reason I bring it up at all is not because of Pink Floyd, because who cares about Pink Floyd, really, right? I mean, everybody listens to them when they're in junior high, but that was a long time ago.
The point is about it is that this is how so much of the discussion of Israel takes place, and the same kind of construction is how Israel is discussed in America. If anybody has a problem with Israel, but it's somebody, hey, you know, prominent enough that it's sort of newsworthy, some movie star says that this happened during the last onslaught in Gaza a few months ago. An actress and her husband, I forget who, one of these, somebody's, came out and said, hey, man, what's going on over there is wrong and all that. Well, they kind of had to pay attention because of the prominence of the person doing the complaining, but no explanation. And, well, so let me ask you. I mean, and I don't know, you're all different individuals out there, and y'all understand the situation to different degrees and have different opinions about it. But if we're just talking about, you know, two other countries, I don't know, two African countries in the middle of sub-Saharan Africa you never heard of before or something like that, I don't know. Would it be relevant whether it's two countries at war with each other or whether one had already conquered the other 45 years ago and was continuing to occupy it under permanent martial law and kill the people and deprive them of the slightest bit of representation, et cetera, et cetera? Those are different things, right? One country goes to war against another country. Hey, they were shooting rockets at us. Versus Governor Rockefeller slaughtering the prisoners inside Attica. Jesus, I can't finish a sentence without screwing it up. That's the difference, right? The difference between New York and New Jersey going to war versus Governor Rockefeller simply just slaughtering the prisoners inside the Attica compound that they cannot escape from. You know, like spearfishing versus shooting fish in a barrel. Hunting wild game on the savannah versus a canned hunt with Dick Cheney with a chain link ceiling so the creatures can't escape. You see the difference there? Right, in this case, the Israelis, they're Dick Cheney. And they, from time to time, mercilessly slaughter their helpless caged prisoners in the Gaza Strip. I wonder if you think maybe that's what's got stuck in Roger Waters' craw. Him and 10 million other people on this planet. Oh, sorry, 7 billion other people on this planet. And you know what? There is no other place in the world where this kind of thing is continuing to happen, where you have a racial colony that is outright just displacing people on the basis of they're the wrong religion, the wrong skin color, the wrong nationality. As one of Benjamin Netanyahu's ministers put it recently, Israel is for the white man. That's got to drive the Nazis crazy, right, when they hear that stuff. Anyway, yeah, it drives the Ethiopians crazy, too, because they get shipped back to where they're from. Doesn't matter if they're Jews. They're black, so they don't count. So they get shipped back. That's why Pink Floyd hates Israel. That's why all decent people hate the government of Israel. It's run by sick, evil, lawless killers. They shot a 10-year-old boy in the throat yesterday. Hey, Al Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Well, dang, Yosef Butts' Skype is offline. I hate Skype. God dang it, man. That's the most interview-ruininest thing. It sounds so much better than a phone, but if your little logo ain't solid green, I can't call you. Oy, what a way to run a radio show. I should at least take better care to get a landline phone number, at least a cell phone number for backup or something if I have to. Oh, well. So, maybe we'll talk with Yosef Butt here in a little while. That's one good thing about Skype, is maybe he'll show up and I won't have to stop the show to call him. I can just click a thing real quick and bring him on in the middle of a segment, so that might be all right. Of course, the context is Iran's nuclear program. It's a very kind of specific, narrow point on that subject, but an important one. And hopefully we'll have Yosef Butt on the show. Actual nuclear expert, unlike the ones you see on TV warmongering all damn day. Alright, anyway. So, as long as I'm complaining about Israel, I want to point you to military.com. That's where you can find online, thanks to Nick very much for the link here, The Day Israel Attacked America. The Day Israel Attacked America. It's an Al Jazeera documentary with brand new audio clips, beyond those that had already surfaced, of the Israeli military communicating with each other that these are Americans I'm killing here, right? Yep. Get back to it. Okay. Good deal. Napalm, torpedoes, machine gunning the lifeboats and the rest of it. Lyndon Johnson's ultimate cowardice in recalling the fighter jets that have been scrambled to go and help these sailors being attacked by the Israelis. And the whole damn story, it's there. The Day Israel Attacked America. It's an Al Jazeera documentary. They took it off YouTube, but you can still find it at military.com. So just go to military.com and put it in the search bar at the top there. You'll find it, something like that. Or just enter in military.com with your search terms, and it'll come up for you. The USS Liberty, The Day Israel Attacked America. It's amazing how little known this story is. It is. It's just absolutely incredible. And I know that, you don't hear a lot of stuff critical about Israel in the American media all the time and that kind of thing, but this particular story seems like kind of a big deal, you know? It's like a Waco massacre at sea. An attack by a foreign state on American sailors like this. In huge numbers. And you know, the way American military men of all services are venerated and held up as idols and heroes, and the reason that you can't contradict the civilians who give them their marching orders is because of just how wonderfully great and golden every single one of these men are. And yet, if they're survivors of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty, well, then, yeah, not so much. Pretty crazy. But anyway, if you want to know the truth about it, there it is. All right, cool. So now, let's talk about the war. I got police state stuff coming up, but first the war. So there's this question I can't get over. You've heard me going on and on and on about this for weeks and for months on the show. Well, really, yeah, for months. Since the start of this war. Well, no, I've been going on about this since 2011, for crying out loud. The revolt in Syria against Assad was very quickly hijacked by America and its partners. And built up, and then they played all their political cards in such a way as to make the matter worse and to try to preempt and prevent any effort for a negotiated peace back then. And they kept this thing going until it just completely blew up in their face and the Islamic State was created, bin Laden incarnate, basically declaring himself the caliph over there and seizing an area the size of Great Britain. And so as horrible and treasonous and crazy as all that is, that the Americans would help even, you know, de facto, as Hillary Clinton herself said, for them to help the rebellion at all is, in fact, helping the Al-Qaeda fighters there. Here are Hillary Clinton's own words from March of 2012.
We know Al-Qaeda's...
Oh, wait a minute. What's already playing? Something's already playing. What'd I do? Let me try.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri.
Oh, man, I got audio coming from God knows where on here. What the hell is that? Do I have an article from the International Business Times open playing some autoplay thing on me? What the hell? Anyway, well, so much for that. God dang it, Bobby. But anyway, stupid, evil Hillary Clinton. There she says to CBS News, "We know Zawahiri has endorsed the rebellion in Syria. So are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria? We know Hamas has endorsed the rebellion in Syria. So are we supporting Hamas?" And she's asking that rhetorical question as her excuse for not doing more to hurry up and overthrow Assad. She's saying to help the moderates as best as they can identify them. In effect, 1 degree of separation, de facto, not very plausible deniability style, means helping Al-Qaeda. It means helping Al-Qaeda with their goals. Are we sure that's what we want to do? And so, yeah, well, then she kept doing it. And ever since the end of 2012, when she resigned, she's been bragging to the New York Times that she wanted to do more to help Al-Qaeda in Syria. Obama wouldn't do it. Now the caliphate has come, and still in Washington, D.C., the policy, at least many, seem to insist the policy must be get rid of Bashar al-Assad. So the way this breaks down is, us libertarians and peaceniks, we don't have a seat at this table whatsoever, right? I'm not picking a side in this thing. I'm just describing a debate to you. On one side of the debate, and yes, I'm redundant here, but I think it's important. On one side of the debate is evil and counterproductive, and that is help Bashar al-Assad's army kill Al-Qaeda dead. Them and the Islamic State too. And Ahrar al-Sham and the rest of them. Put down the Sunni-based insurgency led by the suicide bomber maniacs. Kill them. And reestablish the Syrian state on Sykes-Picot lines, etc. Anybody wants peace, they're going to have to come to the Baathist table, and that'll be the end of the Al-Qaeda rebellion in Syria. That's one argument. It's evil, and it's counterproductive, and it means America again serving Iran and serving the Shiites against these bin Ladenites, which helps them over the long term, which is what they're in it for anyway, proving that everyone who is against them are on the sides of all the false gods and the apostates and the this and that, whatever crap from their own public relations. So it puts us in a situation where it's sure to blow back in our face. But then on the other side of that argument is evil and horrible and absolutely psychopathically, cacklingly, cartoonishly insane. Absolutely out of the question, just wrong on its face. Completely just, it's so stupid, it's so unbelievable that it's unbelievable. And that is that America must continue to focus on getting rid of Bashar al-Assad. The guy whose secular fascist army is the strongest opponent of the Islamic State and the al-Nusra Front, which is al-Qaeda in Syria. They're the only ones who can defeat these guys. And they can't decide which side they're on yet. Still.
Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. So I think I got a time zone problem with Yosef, but I have a time zone problem. I cannot get a hold of him. But that's okay. Anyway, so I ran out of too much time in that segment to run on too long about some things. So you have evil and horrible back Assad against ISIS and Nusra and kill them, jihadis dead. And then on the other side of that argument is evil and horrible and absolutely psychopathically, nonsensically, hilariously insane and crazy and ridiculous. Did I say ridiculous twice? Listen, their argument is they got to get rid of Assad, too. The secular Baathist, three-piece suit wearing, clean, shaven chin having, basically European dictator of Syria. The last place in the Middle East where you can get a drink, as Lou Rockwell pointed out a few years back. And as he was saying then, and these neocons, they want to regime change it. This was in 2004 or whatever, right? Yeah, libertarians, we're a little bit ahead of the curve on this stuff sometimes. And so, yeah, no, you can read A Clean Break and Coping with Crumbling States on my website if you want, by David Wimser there at scotthorton.org/fair use. But, so what they're saying is they want to continue with their regime change plan even after the declaration of the caliphate, even after the fall of Mosul and the declaration of independence of Western and Northwestern Sunnistan from Baghdad, even after launching a war against the Islamic State in Kurdistan and down, you know, at the border of Sunni and Shiistan too, near Baghdad, and airstrikes in Syria as well. In the midst of that, they want to bomb the Islamic State's worst enemies in Syria. Well, that would be like bombing Baghdad and trying to regime change the government in Baghdad, too. Does that make any sense? If it was, again, I'm repeating myself, but I'm trying to beat this through people's heads and maybe get them to pick up the analogy. If France and Britain decide they had to get rid of the Confederacy during the American Civil War, they were going to intervene in our Civil War, and they had to get rid of them slave-owning, white supremacist, communist conscriptors down there. They really were communists, the Southern Confederacy government at war, out of control. And the only way to get rid of these devils would be to first invade Washington, D.C. and kill Abraham Lincoln and regime change the Union Army that was in the middle of fighting a war against the South. Would that make any sense at all? What would the French Republicans say? Wait a minute. In order to regime change the South, we gotta first regime change the North? But how come? What? But that's what it is. In order to prevent the Sunni-based insurgency in this sectarian war from overthrowing the Shiite dictatorship, Shiite-backed secular dictatorship, we've got to overthrow the Shiite-backed secular dictatorship for them. This is what they claim their policy is. This is not a conspiracy theory about them or whatever. This is what CNN is reporting. We must focus on the removal of al-Assad. And to start the war without focusing on getting rid of him was a grave mistake, administration sources are telling CNN. But now, the guys over at the Moon of Alabama blog, they say, nope, not so. And I take them seriously. And I don't know who that guy is. Is B. Bernard, that writes primarily there at Moon of Alabama, is that Billmon? Is that the same B that's Billmon or not? I mean, Bernard and Bill, those, I don't think it's the same dude. But anyway, I saw Billmon on the Twitter, and I know that Moon of Alabama blog comes from the community that was the comment section at Billmon's blog back when it existed a long time ago. This may be a little inside baseball for some of y'all. But anyway, there's some kind of relationship there, and he's always been right about a lot of great stuff, that Billmon guy, whoever the hell he is. And I saw him tweeting the same thing as this, as these guys are saying, which is that, no. Just like Patrick Coburn says, and Scott Horton, what's the rule? What Patrick Coburn says, take it to the bank. And Coburn says, and Lande agrees too, that nah. The policy is to back Assad and kill ISIS. Now, they're going to say a lot of things opposite that because they have to, because of the Saudi lobby, the Israel lobby, etc. For their allies, they have to pretend.
But when it really comes down to it, come on. It's too crazy by two-thirds, man. Come on. You know, evil and horrible, that's one thing. Evil and horrible and absolutely too ridiculous for even Barack Obama to do it. You know, that's something else. And so they quote Obama here, and maybe they're making too much out of this, I don't know. But Obama was finally asked point blank at a press conference in Brisbane the other day. He says, it's the nature of diplomacy in any time, certainly in this situation, where you end up having diplomatic conversations, potentially, with people that you don't like and regimes that you don't like. But we're not even close to being at that stage yet, although Coburn reports they are passing intelligence to Assad and communicating with Assad through the Germans. But then, so the questioner asked the president, just to put a fine point on it, are you actively discussing ways to remove Bashar al-Assad as part of that political transition? And Obama answers, no. And, yeah, you know, I guess, yeah, no question he's a liar and that kind of thing. But in this sense, well, here's the comment from Bernard at the Moon of Alabama blog. He says, so far the U.S. has always said that President Assad could not be part of the transition. Something, publicly, they have insisted that. Something that Russia and Iran insisted on. This is a change in U.S. policy, and in sight of the expanding Islamic State, a sensible one. So, again, this is not an anti-war point of view. It's just choosing between, you know, the two evil ways to get into this war. You're going to do it the absolutely insane, ridiculous, couldn't possibly work in 10 million years way, or just the evil, horrible, immoral, you know, probably won't work in 20 years way. You know, let's settle for the former, I guess. Not settle, but you understand. Oppose the worse one more. I ain't too good at talking, but I'm good on everything, and so that's why you compromise and listen anyway, okay? That's the deal that we're making here. I ain't talk good, but I still say good things. Now, here's another thing that War Nerd and Moon of Alabama are focusing on that is definitely worth a comment, and that I haven't really focused on too much on the show. I don't know. I guess I've conversated a little bit with Coburn about this, and Prothero maybe. I don't know. But anyway, that's the internationalism of this caliphate. Baghdadi's policy and the Islamic State's policy is, and I think this is Warnerd quoting over at Pando, where he says, there's no such thing as Syria. There's no such thing as Iraq, right? That's what he told Ayman al-Zawahiri. Ayman al-Zawahiri said, hey, man, you're too brutal in your war in Syria. Leave it to Syria and al-Qaeda to do that. You go back to Iraq and fight. And Baghdadi's answer to Zawahiri was, what's Iraq? I don't know what you're talking about, you crazy old man, but I don't have to respect you hiding in a basement in Pakistan. I do what I want. And he ended up coming back to Iraq later, but only when he renamed the place. When he was ready to rename it, did he go back to Iraq. When he was ready to take his stolen bulldozers and erase the berm that marked the Sykes-Picot border between Syria and Iraq, only then did he go back. Only after suicide bombing Zawahiri's personal representative to death. But anyway, and he has declared, this ain't got a thing to do with Iraqis or Syrians. This is to be the mythological caliphate that rules over all Muslims. So there's nothing Arabic about it. There's nothing Saudi about it. There's nothing Iraqi or Syrian about it. All Muslims in the world, according to Baghdadi, are supposed to respect his authority as religious leader of them all. And he's encouraging, let's face it, in the real world, a bunch of strangers and foreigners from all over the world to come and do the occupying, which means they're going to get their asses kicked out of Iraq and Syria that much quicker. Because in the real world, there is such a thing as these places and the people from there and their local customs and loyalties, of course. Hey, Al Scott Horton here.
It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. On the line, I got Sheldon Richman. He's the vice president of the Future Freedom Foundation and the editor of their journal, The Future Freedom. Subscribe at fff.org/subscribe. It's cheap, $15 a year for the online, $25 a year for the print edition. And it's really great. There's some really great stuff in that thing, man. It's really worth reading. I sure enjoy it every year or every month when I get one. Hey, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Sheldon?
I'm doing fine. Always glad to be with you, Scott. Whoa, whoa. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me back.
Happy to have you. Back up just a little bit from that mic, please.
Oh.
Coming in loud and clear.
Okay.
All right. So, this jerk Henry Kissinger, why he wrote a thing he did again. This time it's called World Order. And Hillary Clinton wrote a review of it for the Washington Post. But before we get into your review of her review of Kissinger's book here, Sheldon, let me ask you, what's your problem is? Because, you know, this Hillary Clinton, she has checked all the boxes and she has done all the right things. She was married to a president. She was a senator for a while, Armed Services Committee, started a couple of wars when she was Secretary of State. And then, so now she has the right to be president. And we all have the duty to support her destiny. And so, how dare you get in her way, jerk? I mean that seriously. She deserves this. Just ask her. She'll tell you.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of what I think was the unofficial motto of the Bob Dole campaign. It's my turn.
Right.
Which is always very persuasive. You know, just President Dole, you know. Name a war that President Dole got us into, okay? Anyway, yeah, you're right. I mean, Hillary has it all. She's the candidate of Wall Street, and she's the candidate of War Street. And she's managed to combine neoconservatism and neoliberalism. And by neoliberalism, I mean, you know, the IMF, the Washington Consensus approach to, you know, rebuilding the world. So she's put it all together. And I think that just means she's a consistent person. We can't accuse her of really contradictions. I think her program is quite consistent. It's pro-empire. It's pro-corporatism. She's got it all.
Well, she's got the NPR crowd locked up, too. The whole, you know, outlaw your size soda and outlaw cigarettes faction. The busybody won't leave anybody else alone faction. They all just love her. And plus, whatever, just sort of institutional feminism and the kind of washout from that where, you know, women by the millions across America just have the impression that they're just supposed to support this lady because she's a lady.
Yeah, the only thing she doesn't have going for her is she's a terribly rotten candidate. It's amazing that someone with so few political skills could be married to someone whose political skills are so great. I mean, you know, people talk about Clinton being Bill Clinton being the best politician of, I don't know, some people say that, you know, in the post-Reagan era, he certainly had the political skills. He could look you in the eye, they say, and make you believe to him you're the most important person in the world. She doesn't have any of those skills. She seems to have a tin ear. You know, she tried to, you know, she was so overtly playing up to the Elizabeth Warren crowd when she said, you know, there's a mistaken notion out there that corporations create jobs. She never even explained what she meant by that. And then she had to back away and say, well, that was just a shorthand. And she ended up basically dumping The View. So it was just such a clumsy attempt to say to her left flank, hey, I'm with you. You know, no, don't make any rumblings about finding a candidate like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. I'm your person. I'm your woman, your candidate. But I think you're right. A lot of people are going to find it irresistible to favor her simply because you know, she's got, I guess, got the best shot at being the first woman president. That's a pretty sorry way to pick a president.
Yeah.
Because I don't want anybody. I don't want anybody to be president. Nobody's qualified because, you know, government has assigned itself an impossible job planning society. Nobody could do that. So therefore, nobody's qualified.
Right. You know, there was an article the other day, just yesterday, I meant to get to this on the show and didn't, in McClatchy about how Obama, the waning days of Obama's presidency and his legacy is such a damn disappointment. And I was saying, this could be the exact same thing about George W. Bush by the end of his terms, by the same thing about Bill Clinton by the end of his. George Bush Sr., people were over him in four. I remember at the end of the Reagan years, it was like, oh, corruption and Iran-Contra and a $4 trillion debt. Can you believe that? He wasted all on MX missiles and all this crap. Like, people were completely fed up with Reagan. He had a low approval rating by the time he left power, despite all the mythology of him now. And just like you're saying, it's the presidency that's the problem, you know, even if you had somebody decent in there.
Right. And of course, you know, I agree with Lord Acton that power corrupts, tends to corrupt. In fact, I would take Lord Acton an extra step, which is something that Bob Higgs likes to say. And power doesn't just corrupt, it attracts the corrupt. It attracts the already corrupt.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, I think that that's the least attractive thing about Hillary Clinton is just the way that she wears her ambition on her sleeve so badly. Rand Paul, the very same thing. Where the ultimate motivation of their best interest is not disguised. The rest of them pretend all day that they love you and it's for you. But with these people, it's just, gimme, gimme, gimme. I want the power. In fact, I remember they asked Hillary Clinton, why do you want to be president? And she went, because she couldn't say absolute power. So she said, she finally sputtered something about, well, I just want to give opportunities to people or some crap, but it took her 15 seconds to even come up with that, you know, because the answer was because I want to control you. She didn't know how to say that nicely, really.
Well, that problem sunk Ted Kennedy some years ago in a famous interview with Roger Mudd when he was asked, why did he want to be president? And he stammered for about, I don't know, it seemed like an eternity. it was probably just, you know, 45 seconds, but he could not even get out a coherent sentence about why he wanted to be. Yeah. And at least the folklore is that sunk his chances. I don't think she could give anything that would sound like a, you know, any kind of inspirational statement about why she wanted to be president. She's a power monger. She wants power. I mean, she may rationalize it to herself about how, well, but I was doing good for people. But we know what all that means. And it comes out in her review of Kissinger's book. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty significant, you know, if any progressives, good faith progressives and anti-war types are it's hard to imagine this, who are interested in her candidacy at all, they really need to look at what she has said and written over the years. And most recently, this review of Kissinger's book last weekend, because it's very revealing. I mean, she's slobbering all over him. I know she says, we have some differences. We have some policy differences. We have some differences in analyses. But that can't be very important because she praises him. She says that when she was Secretary of State that she frequently asked for his counsel. And then whenever he traveled abroad, he would send her a report about the people he met, you know, the world leaders he talked to and what the situation is. And she talks about how important that is. And she says she and Obama have no differences, substantial differences about the big picture with Kissinger. They both believe in, as she puts it, you know, building a global architecture for democracy and liberalism. And of course, when I hear posers such as, you know, these courtiers and politicians talking about building global architectures, I want to run away because we all know what that means. The rest of us are just mere chess pieces on the board, as Adam Smith put it. You know, they want to move us around because they know what square we ought to be on. I don't like people like that who talk about building global architectures. But if Kissinger is her man in some important way, all we need to do is look at Kissinger's record. I mean, my article links to, by the way, it's at fff.org. It links to the great documentary based on Christopher Hitchens' book, The Trials of Henry Kissinger.
Oh, yeah.
It's devastating. This guy has so much blood on his hands. You know, he's got to wear flesh-colored gloves just to hide it. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm kind of glad the commercial's playing now. That means we get to start fresh on the other side of this with the real history of Henry Kissinger's career, especially for the young who really don't know. They need to know for a lot of reasons, including the implication for the Hillary campaign. Mm-hmm. Just a sec, y'all.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you could hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples, and email me, scott@scotthorton.org, for more information. See you there.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Talking with Sheldon Richmond about Hillary Clinton and her hero and good friend and mentor, Henry Kissinger. she's the progressive candidate for president next time around, I guess. Looks like it's going to be. I did read a thing about how there are no credible Barack Obamas to her left to challenge her in a primary. Possibly Warren or Bernie Sanders, as he said there, Sheldon, but not much of that. And they don't have the kind of support in the Democratic Party that Obama had going into 07 at all. So she's virtually unopposed, at least for now. Things can change, but looks like she's going to be the Democratic nominee here. And where we left off, you were talking about just who this Henry Kissinger is. And as I'm made aware in my email from time to time, there's a substantial part of this audience that's quite young. They're really millennial types who don't remember the 20th century much at all, Sheldon. They don't really know much about this stuff and probably especially the more controversial type history. But you mentioned Christopher Hitchens' movie and book, The Trials of Henry Kissinger there. And, I think it was a book, too. I've seen the movie.
Yep.
But anyway, it's interesting. It is important, I think, that Christopher Hitchens sided with the neoconservatives. He was no anti-interventionist. He sided with the neocons. He wanted more war all the time just for moral reasons instead of the cold, calculated, reptilian reasons of that Rockefeller realist Henry Kissinger, who was... so uncaring about the way he went around getting millions of people killed, as Hitchens would help to do when it came to the invasion of Iraq, for example. But anyway, it seems like the most important story there is the 68 peace talks and the story of Anna Chenault, which is featured in that documentary. Can you tell them about that?
I don't have the details on, he presided over the war in Vietnam after Nixon became president in 1969. First he was Nixon's national security advisor, who, completely overshadowed and emasculated the actual Secretary of State of Record, William Rogers. The power was all with Kissinger, and then Kissinger became Secretary of State and, helped set up those negotiations with the North Vietnamese, Le Duc Tho. In fact, he won a Nobel Peace Prize. But how many people died on his and Nixon's watch? More than I think died under Johnson during their secret plan to end the war and so-called Vietnamization. They were killing lots of people. They went into Cambodia, of course, and lots of people died. But that's not the only place Kissinger was responsible for deaths or who. Or they gave the green light to some U.S.-backed dictator. It happened in Indonesia, where the East Timorese, separatist movement, people were slaughtered by the Indonesian government that was backed by the U.S. And then there's a case I'd written about. There's a book on this. I can't remember the title for right now, but when Pakistan was trying to keep Bengalis in East Pakistan from separating. Eventually, they became Bangladesh, but the ruler of Pakistan with a green light from the U.S. and, of course, with equipment and money, slaughtered hundreds of thousands of people. Why? Because the leader of Pakistan was dealing with Mao Zedong on behalf of Nixon and Kissinger. They desperately wanted to do this opening to China, and they needed Pakistan, who was close to China at the time, to help them. And so, therefore, they weren't going to tell the dictator of Pakistan, "Hey, cut it out! Don't slaughter those innocent Bengalis." And so they actually winked their eye and kept sending them money and guns. And it's a terrible story. There's a book. I wish I had the title at hand. I linked to it in my my article about this in the article about Hillary, and that will lead you to the book written by a former diplomat who was actually posted in Pakistan and who was totally appalled by what was.
Go ahead, I'll pull it up here.
Under Nixon and Kissinger. So Kissinger is let's not forget Chile, right? Let's not forget the CIA inspired coup that overthrew Allende and put Pinochet in power, and he slaughtered, you know, thousands of people, tortured, people just disappeared.
Yeah. That's the Blood Telegram, by the way, is the footnote you were searching there.
Okay, the Blood Telegram, right. Excellent book. And Jacob Hornberger, of course, the president of Future Freedom Foundation, has been writing often about the coup in Chile, the CIA. And that,
so you
of course,
can see
that
how
was,
even a devil like Hitchens has plenty to hate here, you know?
Well, yeah, you know, we could talk about Hitchens another time. I mean, I knew Christopher at one point. He really changed after 9/11, and I think that was a combination of his feeling he was too close to a place that could get bombed. He lived in D.C., and also his view toward all religion, including Islam, I think really distorted his foreign policy sense. I mean, before 9/11, Hitchens was quite solid on just about everything. I'm not sure if there was any gap anywhere. But 9/11 really had a huge impact on him, just to put that on the record.
Sure. Well, and his movie on Kissinger is absolutely great. I went and saw it in the theater when it first came out down at the Dolby Mall, and I definitely encourage people to look at it, because his history of Kissinger's crimes is pretty comprehensive. And it's amazing, really, to think that Henry Kissinger is some kind of leading light. I remember just... 4 or 5 days before September 11th? 2 days before, or maybe it was a week and 2 days. I forget. Could have been 9 days. It was either 2 or 9 days before September 11th. 60 Minutes did a special about how Henry Kissinger was a war criminal and how he was responsible for getting all those people killed down in Chile because he was a terrorist. And then a few days later, terrorists attacked America, and Henry Kissinger was brought on to be the expert to tell us all about terrorism since he knows the subject so well.
Right. Now, he was in office a cold-blooded so-called realist. That there's that school of foreign policy thinking which says, you got to be a hard-headed realist and just do what's in the interest of the United States, as the particular person, like such as Kissinger, sees it. And so morality has no place. People are expendable. That's why I have to laugh, as I put it at the end of my article here. Hillary praises Kissinger for believing that, when we build this architecture for liberalism and democracy, it's got to not only be just in itself, but the people, the citizens need to understand it, need to recognize it as just. Kissinger never cared what regular people thought about anything.
Right.
To him, all that matters is the state. And then the next question is, are you with us or are you against us? Meaning, are you with the empire, the indispensable empire, or are you against it? He doesn't care what the people think. And here's Hillary, like I said, drooling all over the guy. Trying to score points. Who's she trying to score points with, by the way? Why does she think this is good for her political career to be in the Washington Post praising Kissinger up and down? I guess she wants the foreign policy establishment, and he's still a darling of that establishment.
Sure. But they all already know who she is. I mean, you're right. She's already, it's not like she's an unknown quantity to anybody at the Council on Foreign Relations or anything. So you're right. She's just trying to prove the point of what a fascist she is so that we can all know better than to allow her any more power in another couple of years from now. Sounds right to me. What do you think? Good idea?
Yeah. No, I think
let's listen
right
to her.
Of course they know her. Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, Sheldon. Great talk to you again.
Okay, anytime, Scott. Good talking.
Appreciate
to you.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. Darrenscoffee.com. All right, y'all. That was the great Sheldon Richmond, and I screwed up the end there like I often do. The article is called... Whoops, that's not it. That's the one about the Bengali thing. Familiar Bedfellows. Familiar Bedfellows. We'll be running it on antiwar.com tomorrow. Hillary and Henry sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G-E-R. Hee hee. Yeah, Hillary Clinton, she's a devil. And anyway, I brought it up. I should have known whether he knew about it before I asked him about it. But I will tell you real quickly about the story of Anna Chenault and Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon's high treason that they committed in 1968 when Lyndon Johnson was trying to negotiate an end to the Vietnam War. Nixon and Kissinger, who Nixon hadn't been in power in 12 years or 16 years or something at that point. Right? No, I guess that's not right. 8 years. Time does fly. Well, he lost for president against Jack Kennedy, who stole the election better than he did in 60. And then he had lost for governor in 62 or 64 something in California. So this was like his big comeback in 68. I think it was in 62 he lost for governor. And then 64 he stayed out because it was Rockefeller versus Goldwater and go ahead and let them blow each other up. And then, so 68. But anyway, so he was nobody. He had no authority. He had no more authority than you do over foreign policy when he was running for president of the United States. It wasn't like he was still the vice president under Ike Eisenhower, under some color of authority of any kind. This was the October surprise of 68. Never mind how Reagan screwed Carter on the hostages. That's nothing. As Hitchens details in his movie, and as Robert Perry has written about, Nixon and Kissinger sent this lady, Anna Chenault, to go and rat on Lyndon Johnson for negotiating with the North Vietnamese communist government. And to tell them, just hold out, refuse to go along, make a big stink now, ruin the negotiations now, and we'll give you a better deal later. And so that was exactly what happened. That was how the South Vietnamese government found out what Johnson was up to, that he was negotiating secretly with the North. That was how they found out. Nixon and Kissinger told them. And that ruined the peace talks, and the war continued until 6 years later. 6 years later, Kissinger himself negotiated virtually the exact same deal at the Paris Peace Accord, which, as you just heard Sheldon correctly say, he won the Nobel Peace Prize for. And they were virtually the same terms that Johnson was trying to get accomplished in 1968. So, tell me there's such a thing as a rule of law in America, and then explain to me why Henry Kissinger is not in the Supermax next to Ramzi Youssef and Zacharias Moussaoui. And Robert Perry thinks this is the key to the whole Watergate cover-up, at least, or I don't know the key to the whole thing, but this is what they feared was in the records at Brookings and at the Democratic National Committee in their files, that they had the proof of this. What Lyndon Johnson called, quote, treason, and it was that Johnson let it slide, and but they weren't so confident that the rest of the Democrats would let Johnson's judgment rule on that forever, so they were trying to get the documents. I don't know,
It sounds plausible anyway. But the point is, yeah, watch Christopher Hitchens' movie about Henry Kissinger, and you'll see. Read Robert Perry at Consortium News. I wish he would quit writing about libertarianism because it makes me hate him, but he's so great on everything else. Well, he's so great on how evil Republicans and neoconservatives are. How evil Democrats are? Eh, not so much. How evil libertarians are? Yeah, he has no idea what he's talking about. It's ridiculous. It's dumber than the kind of crap you read at Salon.com. In multiple cases. But, yeah, boy, is he good on the crimes of the Republicans and the neocons. So, read your Robert Perry, man. It's like eating spinach. You just gotta. All right, now, Kissinger. And now, I got a lot more in my notes. And very little time. Yosef Butt, don't know what happened to him. I'll try again to get him on the show tomorrow. I guess it's possible we'll have one segment with him coming up, but I ain't heard back from him. Something must have happened. But we'll see what we can do about getting him on the show tomorrow. He's got a great one here at Dan Joyner's blog. But let me just talk about the police state stuff. That's going to take the rest of the damn day anyway here. FBI warns Ferguson ruling will likely spur violence. Well, Lord knows the police around there are ready to wage total war and kill everyone in town if they feel like they need to. Remember how they reacted to the very first little bit of complaints for the execution in broad daylight of Michael Brown with his hands up in the middle of the street. What? Tens of people came outside to complain. Call out the Delta Force. That was the big scandal. Remember how the Ferguson thing started? The big scandal wasn't, well, the cops killed an unarmed black guy, but that's their job. That's what they do. They execute unarmed black guys. So that was horrible, but it wasn't news. What was news was they called out the entire 3rd Infantry Division, it looked like, was the local sheriff's department, to keep those angry blacks in their place. Holy crap. The entire world cried out in unison when they saw the pictures coming out of Ferguson. What the hell? Hands up, don't shoot, indeed. So we'll see what happens. I think there's a 1,000% chance that this cop is going to get away with it because that's the law. They have a monopoly. The government is a monopoly. In other words, they're in charge of prosecuting themselves. In other words, they don't. They don't. That's what it means to be a government employee. It means now you're in the gang. Whether you're a lawyer, which is an officer of the court, or whether you are a judge, whether you are any kind of police officer of any description, any kind of legislator, you can now do whatever you want to whoever you want. Those are the rules. If you know anybody who ever got away with anything, what's the answer? My lawyer knows the judge. My lawyer's blackmailing the judge. My lawyer is the judge's father. Right? That's the only way anybody gets away with anything. It's all about who you know in America. It's funny, too, the way people compartmentalize that knowledge in their head. They know that the army is completely corrupt and horrifying. They know that the legal system is completely corrupt. Any moment they've ever spent in traffic court, they couldn't believe how much it felt like living in East Germany must have felt. But then, oh yeah, no, everything's fine. Checks and balances and separations of powers and the rule of law and democracy reigns and everything's great. Don't worry about how you know that's not true. Don't worry about how, like they report out of Florida, no cop has ever been prosecuted for killing anyone in Florida ever. Now, maybe if one murdered his wife at the restaurant in plain clothes on a Saturday night off the clock, even then, pretty likely to skate, but You wonder what the people of Ferguson are so mad about. They have no power to fight back against this whatsoever. The cops there are as bad as anywhere in the country. Oh, how I do go on. More police state news on the other side of this break.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Me? I don't know. I can't find Yosef Butt, man. He went away somewhere. I do hope everything is okay. All right, well. Big deal. So now back to the cops. So there's this thing at the Washington Post. This is what was autoplaying earlier, ruining my Hillary Clinton soundbite. Here's that Hillary Clinton soundbite I didn't get to play for you earlier because of the stupid Washington Post thing.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria? Hamas is now supporting the opposition. Are we supporting Hamas in Syria?
Yes. Yes, you're a terrorist. Anyway, that was the clip. The reason I couldn't play it is because stupid, evil Washington Post video is on autoplay. I finally found the damn tab and made it stop. But it's a very important thing. Warning, it'll autoplay. But still, you should go and watch this. Sentenced to death without all the evidence. And this is about a guy who obviously did not murder the Quickie Mart lady. They got nothing on him except lies. The prosecutor, if committing crimes was a crime for a government employee, would be a felon for withholding evidence from the defense. And there is far beyond a reasonable doubt that this guy did the crime. His original lawyer let him down and filed some paperwork a few days late. That's it. His next lawyer proved that this guy is innocent. He did not do the crime. Not only is he not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, he's innocent of this. And then that lawyer died in a car wreck. Now he's got another lawyer who's just as good as the last one, thank goodness, and is doing everything he can to get this guy out of prison, but he can't. The courts will not hear it. The paperwork was filed a day late, so rot in hell. That's their answer. This guy's on death row. This guy's on death row. Bill Kunzel. He's been sitting in prison since 1988. And everybody knows he didn't do it, but the courts don't care if he did it or not. To them, what counts? You know it. Their own authority. The finality of the courts. Hey, if the courts say, kill a guy, and then we go exposing it every time that it's, a false conviction, a no good reason, well, that will undermine people's belief in the authority of the court to decide who lives and who dies. And we can't have that. Why? Because we're the court. And we want the power to decide who lives and dies. That's their own words. Come on, you know it. That's what they mean. That's what finality means. That what they say goes is more important than whether or not what they say is right. Including when it's a matter of life and death. Including when they're going to execute a guy that everybody knows didn't do it. And everybody knows the lying prosecutor lied, pretended to the jury to believe he was guilty. Because a prosecutor's a criminal, see. Prosecutors hate truth. Prosecutors hate justice. Prosecutors are criminals. Prosecutors like caging humans in cages. That's their job. And they'll do anything, and this goes for all of them. they will do anything to convict whoever it is that they've decided to convict for whatever reasons may or may not have anything at all to do with that person's guilt. Oh, and all 300 million of us know that. Any prosecutor's perfectly happy to prosecute innocent people. Otherwise, how come they don't prosecute each other for prosecuting innocent people? Right. Because they're all in on it. Because that's what it means to be a government employee. They all protect each other as they persecute the rest of us. That's their job. Waging war against the society they're supposedly sworn to protect. Ha! The enemies of mankind is what they are. For example, here is a globally renowned criminologist expert, advisor to the Department of Homeland Security, professor at Merrimack College. And he says that the war on terror has turned local police into an occupying army and that they are at war against the American people. See, he's not a libertarian. He's an advisor to the Department of Homeland Security. He's a cop. He's a criminologist. He's a criminologist. His job is figuring out how best to fight crime. And he's saying, wow, we turn our cops into soldiers, and then the cops turn the people of America into their enemies. And that's why they keep killing them. Oh, really, huh? You think so? I wonder if that's why everyone hates the cops so much. Is it because all 300 million Americans are all just a bunch of criminals? Or is it because, no, the cops are, and so we hate them? It's just the same thing as back in the last generation or the last decade. Oh, you just hate Bush. You just hate Bush. That was the so-called rebuttal to every accusation of Bush doing evil. Well, you just hate him. Yes, I just hate him because of all the evil things that he does. You know, like murder innocent people all the time. Oh, the poor cops. They're under siege. Everyone's against them. But no one can figure out why. It couldn't be because of their aggression. It's sort of like, let's talk about Israel, but let's neglect to mention that an occupation exists. Let's neglect to mention that the Palestinians are stateless, occupied helots without the slightest right to vote, choose their own authority, security force, to the slightest degree whatsoever. Are 10th class citizens or less. Well, geez, I guess the problem is people just hate Jews. Well, I guess the problem is you just hate cops. You just hate Bush. Yeah, no. I believe in individual sovereignty, and I hate violations of it. Oh, all of a sudden you're making sense. All of a sudden, aggressor murderers like all cops, the government of Israel, and George W. Bush makes perfect sense. Oh, it's because they're evil. Oh, it's because they aggress against individuals and their private property all damn day. What's not to hate? According to America's leading criminologist, Thomas Nolan, the cops are criminals. Yeah, well, no shit. He's right. They are. That's why we hate you. It's because you are the enemies of mankind. That's why we hate you. You're evil. We are good. You're the bad guys. Get it? You're the bad guys. Cop shoots another young girl in the head. Yeah, really? Grand jury no bills another cop for shooting another young girl in the head. Oh, big surprise. Cop shoots an unarmed black man to death every 26 hours in America. Yawn. 2 million people abducted and incarcerated in prisons. Yeah, so. Another 5 million on parole or probation, paying constant rent on their freedom, jumping through hoops, just waiting to get revoked. So it can make the government even and their cronies even more money. Another 5 million of those. Yeah. Red, white, and blue, and USA, and hoorah, and all that, right? Here's one from the Liberty Crier. Buffalo police have opened fire on 92 dogs since 2011. According to this report, and it's the local NBC affiliate here, according to this report, 27 of those dogs, I think it was, were killed by one cop. And all they do is just SWAT raids all day. And they show the footage. Their problem is the killing of the dogs. But they show file footage of SWAT raid after SWAT raid after SWAT raid. What? Supposedly looking for drugs, looking for contraband, breaking into people's houses with military assault teams with machine guns and black masks and Nazi stormtrooper Gestapo body armor, kicking in people's doors, looking for a little bit of black market drug trade. This is America. This is what we let the cops do to our neighborhoods on a daily basis. Like a Waco raid, a military assault on every neighborhood, every day, at least one. And here you go. If your dad dies, they're going to come to your house to take his guns in New York. Here's when God calls cops, they show up and shoot him and kill him. LibertyCrier.com. Hey, all, Scott Horton here to let you know Pizza Noir, Book 1 by Denver Day, is now available at your local bookstore and Amazon.com. Grab a cold cup of coffee and follow Tacoma, Washington Detective Rick Thompson as he investigates the mystery behind the mass murder of dozens of hot young strippers and roller derby girls all across the West, while he learns new things about the world and himself. Pizza Noir, Book 1 by Denver Day. Normal as we knew it is a thing of the past. Find it at scotthorton.org/books or scotthorton.org/Amazon. Hey, all, Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at wholefoodcomplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at wholefoodcomplete.com.